what I'll do is I'll do my intro, and then I'll bring you in, and then we will talk about the Berenstain Bears go platinum.
Oh my God.
That is the extent of the planning involved.
Oh God, I think I could do this.
Like, there's not going to be, you know, well, you've listened to the show. There's not going to be any like secret segments.
Right. Like, this is the part where I quiz you on the book.
Right, right.
Reading comprehension quiz.
Or this is the part where, like, you were supposed to have prepared, like, three of your favorite passages. No, like, I don't, you know.
Oh,
you
I've
know.
Got passages, though.
Oh, I am sure you do. Good. So, yeah, we'll just do our little walk and talk, and hopefully we'll learn a little something along the way. I don't know.
Excellent.
All right, here we go. Welcome back to Deep in Bear Country, a Berenstain Bearcast. I'm your host, Phil Gonzalez, and recently we've learned a lot about life from the Berenstain Bears big chapter books. Just last week, we learned a lot about jealousy and teen angst and how not to behave to a person you're interested in and the complex emotions that come with your first love and what you're supposed to do with the way you feel and how you're not supposed to, like, how acting on impulses can be destructive. And so it's important to understand your emotions, but it's also important to understand that you don't have to act on every emotion. We have learned a lot about just the basic building blocks of being a functional human being in society. So, boy, am I glad this week to not have to really learn a darn thing about being a human being in society. In fact, to learn a little bit something about being a human being who's not really in society. And by that, I mean a rock star. And by that, I mean we're learning about the Berenstain Bears Go Platinum, a big chapter book from, now, see, this is listed as being from 1994, and I'm going to talk just for like 10 seconds on the fact that the Berenstain Bear Big Chapter Book Order and Publication Date series is screwed up. I have no idea at this point what falls where, and you can't even trust their publication dates as they're listed in the book, because there are events that are mentioned in this book that take place in books that don't seem to have been published until after 1994. We're already in 1998, so at this point I'm throwing up my hands and saying the Berenstain Bears Big Chapter Books continuity is a mess. So if you've figured it out, please send me a letter. Otherwise, don't blame me if you get a little bit confused as to what order these books go in, because I am as confused as anyone. And speaking of being confused as anyone, I have a guest on today who is, I guess he's not confused. He doesn't seem confused at all. I don't know where I was going with the segue. It doesn't make any difference. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show, former podcaster and present Twitterer, a person who claims not to have any current nerd cred, although I would say he's got quite the buildup of nerd cred over his life. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Drew Stewart. Hello, Drew.
Hey, Phil. I'm really excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you. Why do you think you don't have any current nerd cred?
Well, I felt like when I had a regular podcast, like, uh-huh, I was the superest nerd. But now that I, like, just guest on podcasts a couple times a year,
yeah,
I feel like I've let that go. But I think that this is going to cover me for like 5 years.
talking about not only the Berenstain Bears, but the Berenstain Bears and popular music in Bear Country.
Oh my God, this book.
You're going to be able to bring this up at parties.
Well, I did actually impress one of my friends with knowledge that I learned from your show.
Oh, yeah?
Because I picked up Berenstain Bears, the one with the piggy bank.
Oh, yeah,
that's
yeah,
what
yeah.
It's called.
The Berenstain...
Yeah, it was the older one.
Yeah.
So it wasn't the one with all the Bible verses.
Uh-huh.
And I was just like, you got the good one here. She's like, what? And I'm like, well... And I explained it all, and she's like, that's weird. I'm
yep.
Like, yes, it is. I don't know if she thought it was weird that I knew all that, or that was a thing.
Piggy bank blessings, I believe, is the God version of it.
Yeah, no, it was not piggy bank blessings.
So, I always ask people, do you have any former history, any past history with the Bears? Did you read the Bears as a kid? Were you familiar with them growing up?
Oh yeah, I was really familiar with them. We had probably 6 to 8 books. I don't remember which ones they were. I know my little brothers had some, because the Great Bear Race, is that what it's called?
Which the one?
The one with Putt, 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 says Little Red.
Oh, yeah, the Great Road Race.
Road Race. I read that one to my little brother 800 or 900 times.
Yeah. strangely, like, out of continuity, like, what are these characters doing book?
Right, yeah. I didn't realize that there was supposed to be continuity until you came on Blame It on Outer Space.
Yes.
To talk about the Mandela effect. And I was just like, this man has a podcast about Bear Country continuity. And I was like, I must listen to this podcast. And then I didn't. But then I picked it back up later during the whole you explaining how God got inserted into the books. And I was like, this is really interesting. And then you got into these chapter books. And I was like, I would have eaten these alive if I'd known they existed. I was the perfect age for it. It would have been great, but I didn't know about it. Now that I've read one, I'm kind of glad I didn't.
Oh, yeah? what was your initial, like, gut reaction to this book?
Well, I loved it. I loved it at first. And I remember you had another guest who'd stopped,
right
in the middle of the book, or what she thought was the middle, the one with the robot.
Uh-huh.
And she's like, and I just had, like, 3 pages. I did the exact same thing. I'm just like, man, I wonder how this is going to end. And then it was just like, and then they ended. I'm like, whoa, I would have been really angry as a child. Be like, why did I pick this book out of the Scholastic? Like, this is no fun. Bring me my goosebumps.
I think because in this particular book especially, it's all about the buildup. Like, it's all about them building this crazy world of popular music in Bear Country. Once you get to the actual, like, performances at the end, that literally goes by in, like, 3 paragraphs.
Right.
And you're done.
That's it.
Yep. Because they're just like, well, no one cares about this. All we care about is who's going to win. Let's jump to that and then just close it off, because you've already seen the kookiness that we can come up with as far as, like, older writers trying to emulate youth culture.
It's like watching an entire season of American Idol and getting really into these characters, and then all of a sudden they're just like, Jimmy won. And that's the entire 3-hour finale. It's just like, well, see you later.
Aren't you going to show us them sing? Nope. Nope. All you need to know is who won.
I am impressed with the books, though. Like, while they're not necessarily big and they're not really chapters so much as, like, a couple pages pushed together. I mean, it does, like, the pages are glued together and sewn on one side and bound in covers, so it's a book.
Yeah.
But I am impressed with the amount of illustrations. Like, you've talked about this before, how brilliant some of the illustrations are. I didn't realize that there were, like, 2 or 3 per chapter, and the chapter's only 2 pages long.
Yeah, it's full of them.
Like there's a point where in a couple chapters, I'll bring it up when we get to it.
Okay. No, there's a... Yeah, this one especially is just packed with pictures, and I think it might be because this is probably a particularly fun book to illustrate. Just going into the different genres and their ability to draw like posters and instruments and just the cubs dressing in different ways and acting in bizarre manners and fashions. Like, this is well, let's just get into what this book is actually about. This Berenstain Bears Go Platinum. Do you wanna tell our audience what exactly we're talking about here?
Well, basically, they're trying to the cubs. Every year they have a musicale fundraiser.
Yes.
And every year it's been awful with Miss Glitch, but then Miss Arpeggio came in and it was amazing, and she let him do rock songs and stuff, which is great. We've got some continuity here.
Yeah.
From that one book where, you know, Miss Glitch is no longer the teacher. Now we got this cool teacher. That's great. Now she's gone in this book. Like, I appreciate the continuity, but it's really crappy that they were just like, well, you know, that cool teacher, she's gone. We need her to be gone. Why is she gone? It doesn't matter.
Here's my question, though. It says, unfortunately, Ms. Arpeggio had never intended to settle in Beartown for the long term. After a couple of years, she got a new job as visiting artist at Big Bear Elementary School in Big Bear City. And I'm like, after a couple of years? But she just showed up.
Oh.
Is this supposed to be, like, years later? Because everyone's the same age. Like, I don't understand. Did they retcon?
Oh, my God. It's like Simpsons or whatever.
Right, right.
They celebrate Christmas, but they're still 9.
Like, the previous book probably was released a couple of years before this one. And then they were just like, well, a couple of years ago, and she showed up. I'm like, no, they're all in the same group. Like, no time has passed.
But you mentioned in your intro about the year. I am not convinced this book was not written in 1992.
Oh, yeah? How come?
Well, the country songs that they bring up, the country artists. Thankfully, we'd gotten them out of our memory by 1998. So
This one has to. I mean, the initial publication date of 1994 sounds about right. Like if they were writing it a couple of years before then, with the once you start referencing Garth Brooks in your story, then you have firmly planted your flag in at best a 2 year like time span.
Let's be fair. Garth Bruin,
right? Which makes him, of course, unfortunately, he has to be related then to Lizzie Bruin and Biff Bruin and all the other Bruins, like, because that's the way Bear Country works.
I mean, there's lots of Johnsons, and they're not necessarily related.
Right, but in Bear Country, they are. They've established that all the Grizzlies are related.
Oh.
They're
trying to have a fundraiser, and a musical fundraiser. Have you ever been involved with?
Have you? So you're familiar with it? I had to look up musical. I've never heard of a musical.
No, neither had I. So what did your definition find? Like, I've had we've called them cabarets. We've called them like variety shows. Is it that kind of thing?
It's basically that. It seems to be like basically just a musical celebrate like a sort of a community musical celebration that I think usually focused on like classical and folk music, like traditional music.
Mm-hmm.
But I have never heard anything of, like, I looked it up just to make sure that the Berenstains had it. I bet it's something that was a lot more popular like in the 40s and 50s that the Berenstains
probably
are referring to, and that you don't see as many of in the mid 90s, but
like before Bikini Car Washes, you had the musicale
raise
money to save the town.
Yes. Could a Bikini Car Wash save a whole town?
Sure. Depends on the movie.
I would say that if your Bikini Car Wash saved a town, then there is no more, like, you cannot have anything poor, like, your Bikini Car Wash has attained a level of like credibility that like most Bikini Car Washes never attain.
Or your town wasn't very much danger. Right?
Or your town has a lot more problems besides like saving the local community center.
So the overview is that everybody's got their own genre that they want to do. They convince the teachers to let them have a rock musical, musicale, and it's a rock contest, and they. And it's going to be a big deal. It's going to save all the extracurricular programs. And meanwhile, Too Tall has got this really clever scheme. Like, really clever scheme to tip everything into his favor without, like, making everybody else look bad. Like, it's really a clever idea. And then it turns out that his scheme doesn't go according to plan, and he loses, and then they never mention the fundraiser again, or money, or crowds,
right,
or anything, and it just kind of stops. But I really want to deep dive on this. I have a lot of notes. I'm really excited to talk about all the puns. There's so many puns.
There are puns on the first, like in the first page, when they start rattling off classical composers,
Beethoven, Schubert, and Sibarius?
Yeah.
Who's Sibarius?
I don't know who Sibarius is supposed to be. But the illustrations of these bears, Schubert looks amazing. Like, I want a poster of Schubert in my bedroom.
Yes. I like Beethoven. He looks real angry.
Yep. But even
And then there's a whole other row that aren't named. Like, we don't have pun names for these people.
I think the one in the middle, is that supposed to be Mozart?
I don't know. But the one on the right kind of looks like Eric Siska.
He has the mustache. He's got an Eric Siska and hair. He's got a Siska mustache and hair.
We'll have to post that for him.
Yeah, we will. But so obviously, as we know, Miss Glitch hates everything.
Yeah, she's awful.
Yeah. And she despises rock music.
This is a musicale. The term musicale, you will notice, contains the word music. Your so-called rock music isn't really music. It all sounds the same anyway.
Yeah. She doesn't even know about cyber rock. Come on.
Cyber rock. What is cyber rock?
It's computer rock music. Harry and Ferdy and I have been experimenting with it. Oh, so Trudy and Ferdy. So everyone has their genre that they want to perform.
Yes. Thankfully, there's not like three people wanting to do the same song. They all have their own genre. They all have made up their own genre, like cyberpunk, cyber rock, and whatever it is those stand-up guys do. But we'll get to them.
Yeah. So they list off there's hard rock, classic rock, folk rock, punk rock, alternative rock, country rock, and heavy metal. And I'm proud of the Berenstains for being able to pull all those genres out of their hats.
There's a lot of bits where I'm just like, they have no idea what's going on. And there's a lot of bits where I'm like, they're kind of on top of it.
Yeah, they've got their finger on the pulse.
Like cyber rock. I mean, like if it's like EDM or chiptunes or whatever, like that stuff's just now coming into prominence.
Exactly. Like I think at this point, like, I don't think Daft Punk had even like had their first major hit on MTV. Like, but because I think I started hearing Around the World and seeing that video like in the late 90s. So that's kind of what they're emulating. Well, we'll get to that. But there's a Daft Punk-esque performance in this book that I'm like, are the Berenstains like just really hardcore into like, were they like on Pitchfork forums? Like just, I've got to know what's coming up.
What's the next French deal? Like,
right. We've got to catch the wave.
And then not publish it for 4 years.
Right. Well, they have no control over that. So, of course, it's Trudy Ferdy and Harry McGill, our computer expert friend, are the three, like, cyber rock experts.
Of course. The nerds. They're going to make nerd music because they can't like anything but nerd music.
Exactly. So the initial part of the book is kind of this like fight between a certain group of teachers and the students as to whether they can even do this kind of musicale.
Right. It's like, first it's Queenie. Like Queenie's like, I have an idea to take back the musicale. And then within two chapters, she's putting posters all over town. Like, I figured there would be like a chapter of planning and a chapter of making the posters and a chapter of drafting things. But no, it's just like within three chapters, she's got posters. Everybody in the city knows about it. And she's, you know, like that we want rock. And she's got signatures for a petition just immediately. I was like, wow, these books are clippy. They're like, boom, boom, boom.
Yep. But first the police get involved.
Yeah.
First, the Cubs have postered over Miss Glitch's posters for the music. Oh, they tear down her musicale posters, and she takes the rock and roll posters to the cops, and which I think is just fascinating. And they're like, "Did you have a permit to put up your posters in the first place?" And she's like, "Well, no." And they're like, "Oh, sorry, lady, you don't have a leg to stand on." I'm like, "What would they have done if she had a?" Would they have arrested the Cubs?
I don't know.
That's Babs Bruno's dad is the chief of police. What's he going to do, arrest his own daughter?
It's happened before. Now, I've got another pull quote here. Like, every chapter has got great quotes.
Yeah.
Officer Marguerite chuckled. It sure looks like Miss Arpeggio opened up Pandora's box when she was here, she said. Pandora's rock box, said Chief Bruno. And now poor Miss Glitch can't get the rock back into the box. What?
That's exactly what I said when I read that line.
Like, my wife is like, what are you doing? Because I'm just sitting there, like, I got my laptop out taking notes as I'm, like, flipping through this book real fast. And I'm just laughing, like, I can't explain to you what's going on, but it's amazing.
What? There's, like, seven metaphors going on here, and none of them make any sense. Like, what is a rock? Like, Pandora's... So, like, I don't get it.
Pandora's rock box.
You know, Pandora's now, rock box.
So we open up a box, it had rock in it, so it's her rock box. And now we can't put the rock back in the box.
Right.
But we're not talking about rocks, we're talking about, like, later I believe that there's another rock pun. Yes. Right. Chapter
but
8.
It doesn't help that pun. Rock box is a song by Run DMC.
Did it come out in the early 90s?
No, it came out like 10 years earlier. But I'm like, so when I saw it, I was like, is there a joke here I'm missing? Am I missing some kind of, nope. Okay. Just making sure I didn't miss something because, and then I was like, is it supposed to be like a reference to like panning for like when you would like put like when you're mining and you're like, I was trying to figure out what a rock box is supposed to be. Then I'm like, oh wait, I think it's just a stupid.
It's in italics.
Yes. So I was like, oh,
rock box.
Her rock. Oh, I guess they're just saying that like Pandora opened a rock and roll.
Or
box.
maybe it's a playoff of lockbox.
Right.
You know, like Al Gore was around, you know, talking about putting things in the lockbox.
Exactly. It's an Al Gore reference. So anyway, boycott.
Yeah. Chapter 3, boycott. You know, all excited. And it immediately starts with, well, it's done. We've got the signatures of nearly every cub in the school, even the kindergartners.
Yes.
Like, Queenie's just like, I got this whole thing. And we get to see the petition.
Yeah.
And it's got everybody's signature on it. I'm impressed with Tuttle's signature. It's really good cursive for
it really is.
What I always imagined to be just a brute guy. But he just plays chess and stuff. I guess he's classy.
I'm impressed that each signature is obviously someone's different handwriting.
Yeah, I guess they passed it around.
Around the old studio.
Hold on, let me write this with my left hand now.
Yeah. Not that... So Miss Glitch agrees to let them do the rock show if they promise to perform several of her favorite pieces.
Yes. This is amazing.
The Bear Danube Waltz.
Sure.
Which, bear isn't a color, but I'll accept that as a replacement. The Bear Country National Anthem.
All right.
And the Bear Spangled Banner.
Wait, what?
The Bear Spangled Banner.
For pun aside, or color aside, so their national anthem isn't the Star Spangled Banner?
I'm going to assume their national flag has bears instead of stars.
Okay. But what's their national anthem if it's not the Bear Spangled Banner?
I assume
Bear America the Beautiful?
I assume it is the Bear Spangled Banner.
But they're listed as separate songs.
Oh, wow. I totally didn't even notice that. I was so focused on the fact that the Bear Spangled Banner is...
It doesn't say the Bear Country National Anthem, the Bear Spangled Banner. It's and. They are separate songs. What is the Bear Country National Anthem?
Okay, so this answers a lot of questions. First of all, we know now that their country is not actually called Bear America or whatever. It is
right,
Bear
unfortunately.
Country. The name of their nation, is Bear Country. Like, not
100%.
Even... Once upon a time, you could believe that Bear Country was like the area between the mountains that they had moved to when Papa and Mama and Small Bear moved out of their cave. They moved into Bear Country. Now,
yeah, like the back country. Like, it's not really a place. It's just kind
of a
nickname.
Yeah, it's Bear Country. This is where all the bears are moving to. Now we know for a fact that the entire country, however big it might be, and as we'll learn in future books, it goes from sea to shining sea, the nation in which they live is now just, it's Bear Country.
Yes.
We also know that however bear-spangled their flag might be, that their national anthem is not that.
Right.
That Francis Scott Bear witnessed the battle of I'm having trouble coming up with a pun.
The War of 18 Bear.
Right.
I don't know.
and wrote a poem called The Bear, because he looked up and he saw this flag with bear faces, I guess, all over it. Was inspired to write a poem. As we all learned later on, a very racist poem, and that no one made the national anthem of that.
No.
So,
but it's still popular enough that Miss Glitch likes it.
And it's probably good, because as we learn from the school fight song, their rah-rah-rah songs are a little more violent than the national anthem that we have.
Jeez.
So what are the lyrics to the Bear Country School's fight song?
Well, we've got a wonderful illustration of the gang. Tuttle's gang with their arms around each other. I imagine they're swaying back and forth. Fight 'em, bite 'em, beat 'em, eat 'em. Smash 'em, bash 'em, dump 'em, thump 'em. Yes, eat them.
Eat them. That's not a song.
No.
That's a chant. It's an angry chant. And this is one of the few things from like this area of the book that actually comes into play later on.
Yes.
So keep those lyrics in mind. Fight 'em, bite 'em, beat 'em, eat 'em, smash 'em, bash 'em, dump 'em, thump 'em.
And I was taking notes as I was reading, you know, like with theories and things. And I did actually call this.
Did you?
Like the twists I managed to call, and I have evidence here.
All right. So they decide that, you know, this is all negotiation. This is the detail you wanted. This is the long negotiation, yes, with the adults and the
first
adults,
of many.
Yes, the adults agree to let it happen on certain conditions.
Yeah, because it's going to be a fundraiser.
Yeah, and make a lot of money.
Yeah, so if it's going to be a rock concert, like a battle of the bands, they think that they're going to bring more money in to save, you know, Mrs. Glitch's music program and what's Grismire? Coach Grismire's sports.
Yeah. Yep. Okay, and I brought this up. They've been talking about how the music program is in trouble and the sports program is in trouble. And I'm like, we know we're dealing with a fictional universe here because this is the only school where the arts programs and the sports programs are on equally shaky footing. Whereas in reality, more money would simply be pulled out of the arts program and put into the sports program.
Yeah, yeah. That's good. They're not in Bear Country. What is their town called?
Bear Town.
Mm-hmm. We know that Bear Town at least has some priorities straight.
Yes. And then as Mr. Grismire says, let's rock.
And we get an illustration of that. There's four illustrations of people just... There's literally, holy crap, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 illustrations on 6 pages.
Yeah, let's rock. And he's saying it with enough force. It's Grismire who's saying it with enough force to apparently knock Brother Bear over.
He's just leaning out of frame.
What is happening? and Miss Glitch looks mad.
Mm-hmm.
So our next chapter is called Toxic Sludge. And
this is where we get into the actual deep things. This is actually a book about pollution. Surprise! Oh, no, wait. No, it's not.
So this is one of my pet peeves about everything, about life, about the world and literature, which is no matter how good of a writer you are, it is next to impossible to make up plausible-sounding fictional band names.
Well, I don't know. There's a lot of running jokes with, you know, like that was my band's name in high school.
Right.
But like Toxic Sludge is a little, I think it's too pedestrian.
It's too, to me, it's too, like, if you look at actual band names, they're ridiculous, but they're not, I don't know. Toxic Sludge sounds like a name a parent gave a band.
It does. You know, that Toxic Sludge band you listen to.
You know.
You mean the Stone Temple Pilots. Yeah, whatever.
Right. Yes. I can imagine the Stone Temple Pilots probably got referred to as Toxic Sludge quite a bit.
I don't know. It's the first name I could think of.
Stone Temple Pilots. Did parents used to, like, insult the Stone Temple? What are you listening to in there?
It was the most obscure band name I could think of that I don't know the meaning to.
You'll take away my Stone Temple Pilots when I move out of this house, Dad. All the time sitting up in your room with your Stone Temple Pilots and your Toad the Wet Sprockets. What's going on?
See, that's a good one. Toad the Wet Sprocket. There we go.
That's a deliberately stupid name. That's from a Monty Python sketch.
Oh.
That was
mine. Oh. Okay.
So, yeah. So maybe Toxic Sludge got theirs from a old... Whatever the Berenstain Bears equivalent
Monty
of Monty
Bear
Python.
And the Flying Circus.
Yeah,
there
you go.
It's even an animal name.
So who is Toxic Sludge?
So Toxic Sludge is basically like they're supposed to be this really hardcore band, but they you know, one of them's got like a hat exactly like. Oh no, this is the gang, isn't it? The illustration of them thinking about being Toxic Sludge.
Right.
It's supposed to be them. Okay.
Yeah, that's them, but there's a poster of Toxic Sludge in their room, and one of them is wearing a top hat just like Slash.
Yeah. So there's supposed to be this band that smashes their guitars before and after every performance.
Yep. Which is great.
So they're going to make a Toxic Sludge cover band.
Yeah.
And this is Tuttle's big scheme to win a prize that hasn't been announced. Like, he's really in it to win it. And there's no, like, no one set any prizes.
Right, there's nothing to win.
There's nothing to win, but he's going to bend over backwards to win this contest because. So they're going to make fake guitars in shop class to smash.
Right.
As an homage to Toxic Sludge. Okay.
And then we get to an even better name.
Oh, God.
For a band.
Smashing Bananas.
Smashing Bananas. Is this perhaps a reference to any band name you can think of?
Shoot. You too?
So this is the thing where I'm like, obviously the people who wrote this book don't know anything about Smashing Pumpkins. And if right. you did, if they did, if Stan and Jan Berenstain were huge Smashing Pumpkins fans, mea culpa. That's my bad. I'm making assumptions. However, there are so many things in this chapter. If you did know something about Smashing Pumpkins, I would think that you would make Smashing Bananas at least something like you could do a pretty funny Smashing Pumpkins parody.
Sure.
But they don't. They do something entirely different. Also, we have already established in previous books that the music television station in Beartown is called BTV. It's no longer called BTV in this book.
Oh.
It's called BMTV, which stands for Bear Music Television, but I can't help but assume that BMTV is also a commentary on MTV.
You think? which makes me wonder what else was on BMTV? Like Bearsy Shore?
I'll tell you what Papa Bear would say is on BMTV. A bunch of crap. Because we get to find out Papa Bear's opinions about popular music when a Smashing Bananas music video comes on.
Yeah. So we get multiple illustrations of them. They seem to be wearing necklaces made out of bananas.
Yes.
And then after every song, they then smash the bananas.
Yep.
So apparently the Berenstains are very confused about are very convinced that everyone smashes something, and if it's not their instruments, it's going to be the fruit or squash that's described in their band name.
The idea of popular music is people smash things on stage, and they all have crazy hairstyles.
But we get multiple illustrations of the smashing bananas. Smashing bananas.
Yes.
And then we just... I guess they didn't fill their quota because there's just, as Papa goes upstairs to look for old records that he liked when he was a kid, there's an illustration of him walking up the stairs. Like, this is not important. I can imagine this in my head. I don't need an illustration of it.
I do want to say that their description of, after a few ear-shattering minutes of guitars shrieking and moaning, not to mention the screaming of the lead singer, which doesn't sound like Smashing Pumpkins, the group plucked bananas from their gold chain necklaces and smashed them on their instruments. Then they smashed some more on each other's instruments. Then they smashed some more all over their own bodies. And finally, they smashed the rest all over each other's bodies. And I will say, as someone who grew up in the MTV era and saw that Madonna's Like a Prayer video was banned from MTV, if a music video included the band members smashing bananas all over each other's bodies, that video would air once.
Yes, it would. And there would be so many... It wouldn't just be Papa going upstairs to look for Bruin Brown and his Band of Renown records.
Right.
It would end with Papa, like, phone... Like, this would be the episode called Boycott. This would be the chapter called Boycott. Where it would just be Papa and Mama on the phone with all these why did you show my children this? And
yeah. And also, from the appearance of the Bears, I would say that this band, Smashing Bananas, is far more a Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Oh, definitely.
Just from the hairstyles and the sort of like just their behavior on stage.
Is
and
one of them wearing a mesh shirt?
One of them's wearing a mesh shirt. One of them has like a fanned haircut. There's all kinds of piercings going on. One of them has a sax. So I'm just going to assume that this is your smashing, not you, this is your Red Hot Chili Peppers
XP. I missed the sax.
Yeah.
What instruments do they think are in bands? Like, this is a rock band, let's put that saxophone on!
Two guitars and a saxophone. So while Papa Bear is up getting...
One of them's a bass. There's four little pegs there.
Again, Red Hot Chili Peppers. While he's getting Bruin Brown and his band of renown, the Cubs and Mama think of their own their own kind of music. What are they gonna do?
They're going through everybody's different things. Like Queenie and Bermuda and Babs are gonna do form a group called Girls with a Z.
Mm-hmm.
That does feminist rock.
Feminist rock.
No comment. No
yep,
commentary.
That's it.
Just they do feminist rock.
We learn a little bit more about it later.
And, you know, Harry and Ferdy and Trudy are doing cyber rock. And Mama actually does ask the question, like, why don't you just do one of those genres? And they're like, well, we don't, you know.
No, they don't say, well, we don't. They say some of those groups are going to be really good. Except for Barry's, of course. Because what is Barry Bruin doing?
Barry Bruin is mixing rock with stand-up comedy. I'm sorry I skipped over the best part.
So like when Sam Kennison would do, like, when he recorded a few songs.
I guess. But it's not like Weird Al, like you're thinking, where he's making funny songs. He's literally doing stand-up bits, which
yeah.
we find out later.
And I guess singing them.
I don't know.
And has been established, Barry Bruin, not funny.
So Sister says that they're thinking of country rock.
Yeah.
Sure. Which, of course... This was the 90s. Country rock was just coming into place. But Mama immediately goes back to the 70s and brings up Loretta Griz.
Loretta Griz! Now, little do they know, but in 2005, Loretta Griz would have quite a comeback when Jack Bear of the Bear Stripes produces her solo comeback album. But that's for another book. They're talking about country rock, like
Garth Bruin.
We have heard the name. So we already had Bruin Brown and his band of renown. Mm-hmm. They're really leaning hard on Bruin in this book.
I don't know why. But I did, in trying to come up with a bunch of BMTV bear things, I brought up a list of bear types.
Uh-huh.
And there are a lot. Besides just Grizzly and Bruin, but that seems to be what they stick with.
Yeah, yeah. It's one of those. Those are when I was investigating the history of like the Grizzlies versus the Bears, like in their Civil War. I did like a little bear research, and I was like, "Oh, this is a far more complex animal than I had given it credit for." So here's a thought. At no point in the history of Bear Country, in any of these books, have we been given any indication that any of the Cubs could play music.
Right. You'd think it would come up.
Now, they can all play music.
They're all apparently very talented.
Yeah. I just wanted to mention that.
Yep, that's a good point.
Because brother and sister want to start a country rock band, and you see them imagining holding their guitars, and I'm like, huh. I've never seen these bears hold guitars before, or wear cowboy boots
or
for cowboy
that matter. Hats for that, yeah.
That's a whole other thing. I don't need to see like.
But
their, yeah,
Mama somehow convinces them to not only do a country rock band. Spoilers for me in a few seconds, but like, Gran and Gramps have a jug band. Why don't they teach you how to play jug band? And you'll make it country rock.
Yeah.
Country rock jug band?
Right, right.
Again,
I mean,
like with the saxophones, have you ever listened to music?
And prescient though it may not have actually been, this is looking way into the future at your like Edward Sharpe and the Magnetic Zeros type bands. You're like pseudo down home corn pone, but we're from like Portland. Let's have a hoot nanny, but also appear on Top 40 Radio kind of music. This is like that style of music decades before it actually became a thing.
But the illustration does remind me of another particular bear jug band.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's something inherent to your basic brown bear that that just pulls it to the world of jug bandery.
So I'm wondering if like Disney was like, "Eh, we're going to sue you if you run with this jug band idea." But then realized that the Country Bear Jamboree is a little too close to Bear Country Jamboree, and maybe they like agreed to settle out of court.
Right. For all you collectors out there, we just saw the publication of the Berenstain Bears Visit Grizzlyland, by the way. So we do know that there exists within Bear Country a theme park called Grizzlyland, which sounds a little familiar to an amusement park you might be familiar with.
Oh my god. So like, do they have bears dressed up as bigger, more cartoonish bears?
Right. Is there the hairless primate jamboree?
Oh goodness.
Well, we're only about a third of the way through this book, so
jeez. Oh god. Okay.
So
there's
we have
so many good puns.
So we get a next chapter is the announcement.
The judges.
Oh yeah, the worst judges in the world.
Teacher Bob and Miss Glitch.
Yeah. Which I don't know why Teacher Bob's a bad choice. He's a nice guy.
Because he only likes the Bertles and the Rolling Bones. Which is not a bear pun, by the way.
No, it's not. I mean, I guess bears will eat something down to the bone, so.
Eat them. There's so much violence in this book.
And then we learned that there's a song called My Flaky Breaky Heart.
That is what they're going to cover. They're going to sing My Flaky Breaky Heart as a country rock jug band.
Yep. Which sounds perfect. I mean, why not? It's probably about the most mid-90s thing you could write on a piece of paper.
There's nothing. It's really obvious. Like, I had to look it up, and I was like, yeah, it was a number one hit from, like, 92 through 93. So exactly when they were writing this, they're like, kids will love this. We need to write the Flaky Blakey Heart. It'll be on the, they'll love it.
We also learned that the Cubs are going to call their jug rock band the Jugsters. Miss Glitch will love it.
Oh, nobody has a problem with that, though.
It's like, I would tell any children out there, just keep the word jug of in any format just out of your band name, and you'll live a longer, happier life.
We have the biggest jugs. What? Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that.
Once we're up on stage with our big jugs, you will see that we truly are the Jugsters. And 2, 3, 4, Flaky Breaky Heart.
Oh, goodness.
I think that's the filthiest thing I've ever said on this show.
I'm sorry. I made you. So the next chapter,
yep.
We get the culmination of Two Tall's scheme, which I have to say is impressive.
This is amazing.
So, like, his idea of, like, we're going to make it a rock concert. That's great. I mean, Queenie was involved in that, probably with his help. Okay, we're going to have a rock concert. Cool. We're going to be Toxic Sludge. Awesome. We're going to smash our guitars. Great. He gets the lead singer from Toxic Sludge to be a guest judge. Not that he asked the school about this. He just was like, he wrote and said, hey, we're having a contest. Will you judge it? And the guy's like, okay. And everybody's going to be cool with this.
Because Too Tall thinks this will guarantee them the winning slot.
And he's not wrong. I mean, unless they're really bad. Like, and you destroyed my song. What's wrong with you?
Well, as we learned from Back to the Future, just because Huey Lewis is one of the judges of your talent show does not mean you'll win by playing a Huey Lewis song. Sometimes you may play a Huey Lewis song a little.
It's just too darn loud.
Yep. So you could actually be taking a huge risk, Too Tall.
Yeah. So Stevie Sludge.
Yeah, yeah. Stevie Sludge is going to
do the concert for him.
Sludge Mania hits the town.
Yeah, so Too Tall's just like, you know, we've got the band, we got the lead singer, and of course nobody knows who Toxic Sludge is.
Mm.
So Miss Glitch brings in a Toxic Sludge CD to play to the rest of the administration. Where did she find it? Did she buy one? Did she, like, confiscate it from a student at some point?
I was just going to say, I bet it came out of a locker.
It's not just the appearance that we object to. Their language is foul and disgusting, not to mention ungrammatical.
So there's this weird logic that's used in this chapter where, like, you see pictures of the band, and they're, like, horrified at how terrifying these, like, band members look. But Teacher Bob points out that they don't look any worse than Mr. Hyde in the classic movie Dr. Bruin. There's Bruin again. Dr. Bruin and Mr. Hyde, nor were they more frightening than the monster in Frankenbear. Therefore, because they aren't any worse than things the teachers teach in class, their appearance is okay.
And we don't get into their foul language or anything
right,
at this
right.
point.
All that matters in the end is that they're going to have a lot of ticket sales.
Right, exactly.
Like, they can swear up a storm, doesn't matter.
We get one of my favorite parts, the second to last paragraph of this chapter. Once more, Mr. Grismire and Miss Glitch found themselves between a rock and a hard place. The rock of toxic sludge, so to speak, and the hard place of insufficient funds for their favorite school programs. That was the point where I was just like, I love this book. I love big chapters. This is amazing. I'm in it for the long haul.
And that's how Stevie Sludge got to judge the Bear Country School Rock Contest.
Because of the hard place of insufficient funds for their favorite school programs. Like, it's such a long sentence.
Well, the next chapter is the dress rehearsal, and it has one of my favorite lines in the book, which is, So the contest is at Great Grizzly Hall, but the dress rehearsal is in the school auditorium. Papa's driving brother and sister playing his tape of Bruin Brown and his band of renown. The Cubs were so polite about it, they made only one comment. That was when sister said, "You'd better stop the car, Papa, because I think I'm going to throw up." And that's it. Like, there's no, like, fallout from her.
Right. She doesn't get hit.
Right. Pushed out of the car. Like, that's a terrible thing to say to someone who's listening to their favorite music.
I really like this music. I think it's disgusting.
I'm going to throw. You better stop the car because I think I'm going to throw up. Like, it's not that. It's just big band music. Anyway, BMTV has loaned them speakers and strobe lights. They
Which
get everything.
I was surprised. I'd forgotten it was owned by Squire Grizzly, but everything is.
And we get to see their dress rehearsal.
Yeah, and everybody's certainly dressed. Like, we've got the Cubs, brother and sister in their cowboy outfits. We've got the stand-up set where even the band members look confused.
And concerned. And Barry Bruin, though, is wearing a hilarious flowery shirt. That's how
you know
he's doing stand-up.
The girls, for being a feminist band, they're certainly, they all have headbands, and they're wearing, like, dresses, solid one-piece dresses that go all the way to the ground.
Yeah, they're dressed like the Supremes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought it was more of a Stevie Nicks kind of look.
Oh, maybe. It's hard to tell with, like, the monochrome color. And one of them is holding a guitar. Doesn't it say what song they're singing?
They're singing I Am Female.
That's right. The classic feminist hit, I Am Female.
It literally says the old feminist favorite.
I mean, obviously it's supposed to be I Am Woman, Hear Me Roar.
Like, I'm trying to, like, stress to the listening audience that these books are more amazing than can be contained in a podcast.
This book in particular, it is.
Oh my God.
It is amazing. I Am Female, Hear Me Roar, grr is how it goes. you don't find that out till the next chapter, but those are the lyrics. I Am Female, Hear Me Roar, grr.
Yeah. Oh goodness. Then we get an illustration of people moving equipment.
Uh-huh.
Which is an odd illustration, but it's actually the nerd rock group.
Yes.
And they have, like, are they supposed to be Devo hats? rockets. They look like they've got antenna. They're like flying saucers with like antenna, and they're all just like they've got switches and knobs that they're just turning.
I was gonna say this is like intense like music. This is like when I watch videos sometimes of musicians like who do a lot of mixing and a lot of electronic music, just to like, because I love watching musicians use equipment that I could never even begin to fathom. And this looks like when they're like, here's my new like $1,200 synthesizer. And I'm like, oh, that's a synthesizer. Because there's no like obvious musical keys. It's literally just like toggle switches and knobs and dials. And you're like, this is confusing and complicated. Ferdy has something in his mouth. And
I don't know. It's some kind of vocoder or something.
Yeah, it's. I don't know if he's supposed to be like blowing air through it because it looks pretty solid, but it has toggle switches and buttons on it, or if he's like manipulating some kind of flange with his tongue. I don't know what's going on. Sorry, I didn't mean to like say that out loud. Pretty factual. Manipulated the flange with his tongue is a sentence that Jan Berenstain never wrote, but it exists in the universe now.
That is now the dirtiest thing you've said on this podcast.
And Harry McGill and Trudy are working the toggle switches and dials. This is I desperately, if any of our listeners out there in listener land want to write the name of their band is Cyberpunk. If anyone out there wants to write a cyberpunk song and send it in, I will play it on the air. It'll get its own.
Be the new theme song.
Yeah, I will do if anyone wants to do a cyberpunk rendition of the theme song to this show, I will play it. I will make it the new theme song for 3 episodes. because this looks amazing.
Oh, goodness.
The Jugsters, give me a break, says Too Tall.
Which we get an illustration of yep. Too Tall saying the Jugsters.
Give me a break. What I do love about this, though, is it kind of sets up that the Jugsters are going to be your winners. Because
mm-hmm.
Too Tall's cocky, and they keep writing off the Jugsters as like the band that no one's going to like.
Now, we missed that everybody's worried because Teacher Bob is a nerd.
Yeah.
So they're like, well, obviously that cyberpunk's going to win. Because Teacher Bob is such a huge nerd.
Yeah.
He's going to have to like their music.
He loves nerdy stuff.
So it's actually, we assume that the Jugsters are going to win because it's the Berenstain Bears.
Yeah.
They're the bear family.
Yeah.
And, you know, Too Tall is cocky and assumes he's going to win because he's manipulating everything. But the characters all believe that Teacher Bob is going to choose Cyberpunk. So it is kind of like who's going to win.
That's true. Speaking of things that go nowhere, though, Chapter 10, Sense and Censorship, which is a mini drama in which nothing happens.
It's which has two complete illustrations. The entire content of the chapter is the teachers reading song lyrics to each other to make sure that they're, you know, not risque or anything.
Right.
Which, you know, you think you'd do before you let them rehearse, but
right. But it's also where we hear the lyrics to I Am Female, the lyrics to Barry Bruin's comedy song.
They're performing a number called Take My Mom, Please.
And I'm going to assume this is a parody of the Rodney Dangerfield rap song, Rappin' Rodney Dangerfield.
No. Why did you bring that up?
Which is just his jokes rapped. And this is just bad jokes sung.
And then,
but this is where the school fight song comes back into play.
Yes.
Because Too Tall and the Smashers have lyrics that are horrifying.
Oh, they're so horrifying. Down with mush, down with love, up with push, up with shove, down with neat, down with clean, up with dirt, up with mean.
Which does sound very like Norwegian death metal.
Brah.
Yep. If anyone out there in listener land wants to do a Scandinavian death metal version of Too Tall and the Smashers, Down with the Mush, Down with Love song, I will play it as the outro music for the next 3 episodes.
Oh. Yeah, but Mr. Honeycomb does, Miss Glitch is like, those lyrics are much too violent. And Mr. Honeycomb is like, they're not any more violent than the school fight song.
And everybody's yes. like, oh, yeah, I guess you're right.
Way to flip that. Way Ooh. To turn that back on its head. I want there's a picture of him reading of the Down With Mush, Down With Love lyrics.
He's kind of grinning.
And I would love an isolated, just a poster or a T-shirt of this, because it looks like, out of context, it looks like this guy reading like a very angry love letter or like arbitrating like a divorce because Miss Glitch and Mr. Grismire are angrily sitting off to the side like some sort of
disgruntled. Yeah, it's like he's reading the last will and testament of somebody, yeah. who, you know, and their kids have been fighting for decades. And it's like, who gets all the money?
Well, first, your father is making me read this poem he wrote out loud to you. Down with Mush. Well, then a shy visitor shows up in town.
Goodness. So when it looked like the entire thing was hinging on Tuttle's scheme, I actually wrote down, is this a setup to the Wayne's World joke of Alice Cooper being the nicest guy in the world? And then my only notes for this chapter are, I was right, in all caps.
Because what happens?
So they go to the train station, which they have a train station.
That's true.
To come from Big Bear City, which is apparently far enough away that you need to go on train.
Yeah.
And they go to pick up Stevie Sludge, and like the entire train empties out and they don't recognize him. Nobody looks like Stevie Sludge. And then just this guy, this really quiet looking guy with a suit and glasses comes over and he's like, yeah, you know, Stevie Sludge is my stage name. And my real name's Arnold Shy.
Which is really tipping your hat there.
There's an E on the end.
That's true. He even says that. Shy with an E. And
just in case you're reading it out loud and you don't want to explain the pun to your child, I guess.
And that's what happens in that chapter. And then the next chapter.
Right. The next chapter is... like, I was like, this is okay. Here we go. We get to the mystery. We get to, like, so Cyberpunk can't find their equipment. Like, it takes hours for them to set up their equipment. So they were going to go first because it's easier to tear it down than set it up. None of their equipment's there. What is it? Oh, the gang stole it without Tuttle's permission. So Tuttle yells at him.
And they give it back.
And I guess set it up in time for the show to start on time.
But you get this really well-shaded, like, dynamic illustration of Tuttle threatening...
threatening the members of his own gang because he likes Harry.
Yeah.
Oh, it's kind of really adorable.
Well, he's just like, Harry McGill's the best chess player. He's my best friend outside of you. None of you can play chess. Which is accompanied by... So there's this illustration of... the audience watching the performance and a bear at a microphone, but it was obviously illustrated to have text over part of the illustration.
Is that what that is?
Yeah, because
there's
like,
whole parts of this illustration that are completely blocked off.
So these illustrations were of course written for a book, but this is an ebook, and so the 2-page spread is just shown as a single image. Where the writing would be though is just blank, and where the writing would be is the upper half of the bear's body. So it looks like a bunch of bears sitting in an audience watching a torso-less pair of legs.
I assumed it was a magic show that they didn't tell us about, the magic opening act.
No, so
I could cut myself in half. Woo.
So this would probably be like where the beginning of chapter 13 would be. Like you would see the heading of the chapter right there.
Okay.
Chapter 13, go figure, and you would have like the first paragraph.
Okay, because it yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So everyone performs the end.
That's it. I was just like, all right, here we go. The chapter's called Go Figure, and The first paragraph is the sludge guy looking up, and then the second paragraph is everybody has performed.
Yeah, it's like
the first two acts get one sentence apiece, and then girls went next and got a pretty good hand.
Yep.
I guess like a hand, a round of applause. And then the jugsters were next to last, and then But Tuttle had been spreading the rumor, the true rumor, that Gramps and Gran had taught them how to jug band, which it's kind of obvious.
Right. And I'm like, is that bad? Like, someone taught you how to play your instruments? That's usually how it works.
Yeah.
Oh, and so also, we never even mentioned that Bonnie Brown was in the Jugsters, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
And Cousin Fred.
Of course, Cousin Fred. Got to keep it in the family.
Yeah. Yeah, they're non-characters in this book, so.
And they liked it. Bonnie apparently sang the song.
Yeah, she had a nice voice.
That's a good twist on my shaky, breaky, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Flaky, breaky heart.
And then Too Tall and the Smashers.
Yeah. And they got a big ovation. And then the Arnold Shy comes on stage and says it wasn't easy choosing a winner. In fact, there were three groups that could have won out of four?
Yeah. Yes. Well, no one
five.
Knew. Barry Bruin wasn't going to win. But yeah, who was the other? We knew Barry
girls?
Bruin stunk. Yeah, was he? I guess he was referring to girls.
The feminist rock,
I mean, right?
It is feminist. You know about them feminists. So, like, here it is. It wasn't easy choosing a winner. In fact, there were three groups that could have won the prize. But I've decided it should go to Cyberpunk for the innovative, futuristic, cutting edge sound. Like, there's no build up. There's
yep.
just these guys.
Yep.
And then he said they've also got some cool equipment.
Uh-huh.
And then he's like, okay, we give honorable mentions to the Jugsters for their use of traditional jug band instruments in country rock, which I'd like to hear that. I would also give them an honorable mention. And the second honorable mention goes to Too Tall and the Smashers for their imitation of Toxic Sludge. And then things get weird.
Yeah, and then we are thrown a enormous curveball.
Like I said before, they hadn't really announced a prize when Too Tall decided he was going to win. Then they announced the prize, which was a giant smashed guitar.
Right.
That the shop teacher made, I think. And then now here's the surprise winner. The surprise is that the... Toxic Sludge is going to take Cyberpunk on tour as their opening act.
A bunch of children are going to go on tour with a band that has been portrayed as basically GWAR or at the mildest Kiss.
Yes.
I guess they're going to tour Bear Country with this band, bunch of 9-year-olds.
That don't even, that's chiptune, like
playing music that the audience will have zero interest in hearing.
Yes. And it's not like, you know, sometimes you'll go and you'll appreciate the opening act, you know, because you like them already or something like that. These are 9-year-olds.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense from Toxic Sludge's point of view.
No, from a
from
business
Cyberpunk's point of view. From
their parents'
point of view. Their parents' point of view.
And I'm like, maybe Toxic Sludge is like, contractually, we have to have an opening act. But our audiences are so violent that the opening acts have been assaulted, pelted with things, driven off the stage. If we have a bunch of kids up there, though, no one's going to do anything like that. So this will be like our buffer, our safety barrier. Like having a bunch of children open for us will guarantee us that the audience will behave until we can get on stage.
Okay.
So there you go.
It's putting a lot of trust in their crowd that they don't trust.
Right. And so, yeah, these like freaked out space maniacs get to go on tour. And trust us when we say they are dressed like Plan 9 from outer space aliens, like silver suits, helmets with antennae, glowing lights, wide collars, the works.
It's wild. And then the most wild thing is when I turn the page after the 2-page spread, it's over.
Well, it's over in this crazy way that's very, to me, self-conscious, which is brother saying, like, this has been a really weird story.
Yeah,
like who would have thought that all this would happen? And Bonnie's like, yeah, that we'd get this school to turn the musicale into a rock contest. And Queenie's like, or that Too Tall would get Stevie Sludge to judge the contest. And Too Tall's like, or that Stevie Sludge would turn out to be Arnold Shy. And Sister's like, or that he would give an honorable mention to a band called the Jugsters.
Like every point we've made.
And Fred's like, not to mention take Cyberpunk on tour. It was true. No one could have predicted any of it, and yet it had all happened.
This is how the book ends, people. You have to read this book.
And then the last shot goes, what is the last image in this book?
The last image is literally every character still dressed from their concert, looking at the camera, shrugging and saying, go figure. It's incredible.
It's the most Simpsons moment in a Berenstain Bears book I've ever read. It's this, it's all the characters going, this was pretty stupid.
It's amazing.
It reminds me of the it's just like the Simpsons episode where Seymour Skinner, you find out that Skinner isn't really Seymour Skinner, that he was like actually,
it's like a Don Draper situation, right?
Yeah, and like and the judge going, and let us never speak of this again. Like, we're all going to pretend that none of this ever happened. And everyone's like, all right.
Oh, goodness.
Yep. And that's the end. That is literally the end of the book. They shrug and say, eh, go figure.
Like, I thought that it had lost me. Like, I'm just like, and the concert's over. And I'm like, that book was stupid. And then it's just like, yeah, this book was stupid. And I'm like, yep. You got me back, book.
It's that whole thing where it's like, we weren't trying to tell a well-constructed story, you guys.
We just wanted to put in a band called the Jugsters.
Yep. We just wanted to have a bunch of fun with these stupid bands we made up. Like, Mike, or who, I'm not sure who illustrated this one, but Mike wanted to draw a bunch of these, like, crazy bands. Stan and Jan wanted to write a bunch of crazy bands and make up a bunch of stupid songs and make fun of popular music. And we just wanted to have a good time and make you read it. And then when you're done and you're like, what did I just read? Have all the characters, all the cubs turn to the reader and like thumb their noses at them and like give them whatever the Bear Country equivalent of the middle finger is. And then give you a sneak preview of the next book.
And then just walk off stage.
Yep. Literally walk off stage. Like that is how the book ends.
Oh, my God.
And that's it. So, so Drew, what did you think of the Berenstain Bears go platinum? By the way, they don't go platinum.
They do say that the school is going to go platinum because because Cyberpunk is going to go on tour,
right,
with Toxic Sludge, which doesn't make any sense.
No, it makes no sense.
It's not like it's going to bring in, but like they don't mention the fundraiser.
Nope.
They don't mention how many people showed up. They don't mention ticket sales. They don't mention like the point. Like you started off this book talking about needing to raise money for the school. We get all kinds of like behind the scenes of the teachers, multiple chapters of just the teachers, and then it ends with, well, okay, it's incredible.
Yeah,
this book was incredible. I'm really glad that I got to read it with you.
I'm really glad you did too. I'm glad that you you dove in with both feet into this one because it was an intimidating one. If you weren't used to the world of Bear Country, this one.
Oh yeah,
have,
if I hadn't listened to your podcast before and known all the characters and all that kind of stuff, I would have been completely lost and been like, this book is stupid. But as it is, I'm just like, too tall. I know too tall from your descriptions of him and from reading the old books back, you know, the little books back in the day. But wow, this just, it was like the Avengers. It's the Infinity War of Berenstain Bears in that everybody comes together and they all just say, go figure, and then walk off. Like, it's perfect.
This is and this is another example of Too Tall being far more resourceful than we ever give him credit for.
Oh, goodness. I had no idea he could be this like, and not like mischievous. He's not actively trying to like steal everybody's equipment or something stupid like that. Like his idea is like, I'm going to outsmart everybody.
Too Tall contacting Arnold Shy reminds me of when I first tried to contact Mike Berenstain. And was like, well, I'm just going to put this out there and see if I get any kind of a bite. And then Mike Berenstain being like, I'd love to be on your show. And me just being like, oh, I didn't know it was going to be that simple. And So Arnold, and Arnold Schei just being like, well, sure, I'd love to come judge your little elementary school contest. And just I can imagine Tutal being like, I didn't think this was gonna work. Well, now I've gotta like actually back it up. So
they'd already made guitars by this, fake guitars to smash by this point. Like, he was already in it.
He was in it to win it. And what I love is like that he never knew what he was going to win. Tutal did it just for the love of the game. He did it just to win, and he played it fair the whole time. When it looked like his own gang was gonna like try to like cheat their way to the top, Tutal said no. He put his foot down and he's like, "We're doing this the honorable way, and I'm not gonna lose my chess friend over this."
Yeah, have we had a positive book focusing on Tutal? Because it's kind of like he's the focus, him and the teachers.
I would say that the big chapter books, as opposed to the Bear Scouts books, the big chapter books definitely give a far more positive view of Tutal and his, like, if not his motivations, then at least his, like, his potential, like what he's
right.
capable
of. Right, he's not a
being.
Drug dealer in this continuity, right?
Well, this is the continuity that started off with the drug books, but I don't think that the drug free zone is really in continuity with the rest of these anymore.
Like, I mean, because he'd be at least expelled,
yeah,
if not in prison,
at least not allowed to participate in the musicale.
Aren't you a felon?
Yeah, didn't you deal drugs to these very cubs? Didn't you have dealings with the Bog Brothers?
Oh goodness. Yeah, so, no Bog Brothers, no Weasels or Ralph Ripoff or anything like that.
Yeah, no Ralph Ripoff or anything. This was purely the Cubs. They're relying on their own talents. We got a nice callback to Grizzly Grand's One Bear Band.
We got Mama and Papa.
Yep.
Like, that's a rarity for these books.
That's true. Yeah, we got to see a lot of our great characters to sort of like come through. We got to see the teachers and the administrators have a little like of their behind the scenes action, a little of their personal dramas.
Action.
Yeah.
Where they all sit around in the principal's office and complain about things.
I'm looking forward to future books where we find out what exactly happened with on tour with Toxic Sludge. I'm sure that'll be brought up many times.
Yeah. Those characters aren't going to be in the next three books.
Yeah, obviously they're going to be on tour months on the road.
And they're
going to
be talking about it all the time, and it's going to make everybody upset that it's all they can talk about. Well, Stevie was like, yeah, and so after like the concert, except that apparently the whole band is probably straight-laced, and it's all a thing. So it's just like, yeah, he took us out for ice cream.
Right. This is this is like later years Metallica, where they're like seeing where they're dealing with their therapists and like trying to come back together as a band. this is at this point Arnold Schei is getting ready to sue whatever the Bear Country equivalent of Napster is. So that is the Berenstain Bears Go Platinum. It is out of print, but it is available on ebook. You can buy it wherever you get your favorite ebooks. I recommend picking it up, if nothing else, just for the amazing illustrations. They're very wonderful.
There's so many illustrations.
There's so many. They really outdid themselves on this one, including the picture of Eric Siska, which we have to make sure and post on Twitter. Speaking of Twitter, Drew, where can our audience find you?
Well, they can find me there at 005, all spelled out, DOUBLEOFIVE.
Uh-huh.
And mostly I retweet We Hate Movies posts and your posts, and sometimes I try some original content. But yeah, basically I like interacting with people on there. I met a lot of good friends on Twitter.
Yeah.
Including you and several other people. And so yeah, come find me. Let me know that you also appreciate the Berenstain Bears Go Platinum.
And you will always dive headfirst into all kinds of geeky discussions as well.
Oh, anything and everything. I will have an opinion on it. Don't worry.
And so that is 005 spelled out, one word, 005. For me, you can find me at berenstainbearcast.wordpress.com. You can write to me at berenstainbearcast@gmail.com. Find me on Twitter at bstainbearcast. Find me on Facebook at Deep in Bear Country. Go to Apple Podcasts and rate and review the show. We would always love to get a few more stars out there, a few more reviews. Let me know what you think. You can find me on two other shows. I co-host It's Del Toro Time, a Guillermo del Toro podcast with my teenager Ollie, and I co-host Click It Cast, a Beverly Cleary podcast with my lovely co-host John McCoy, where we talk about the books of Beverly Cleary. So find me there. You can find those on your favorite podcatchers. And Drew, thank you so much for doing the show. This was a blast.
Anytime.
Awesome. And for everyone else out there, we will see you all next time deep in Bear Country.